Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Behind the Racket Pod, the podcast taking you behind the racket with today's top tennis players and biggest issues facing the sport.
Behind the Racket is a community to give fans and players in the world of tennis the opportunity to open up like they have never done before.
Visit BehindTheRacket.com for the latest stories, merch, as well as direct links to all of the latest podcasts. It can also be found on iTunes, Google Play, Pandora, Stitcher, and wherever you find your podcasts. Download the episodes and make sure to leave a review.
And we want you to be a part of the conversation. Find me at NoahRubin33 or Mike at MikeCTennis on all forms of social media. You can also learn more at BehindTheRacket.com or MikeCTennis.com.
Special thanks to my sponsor, New Balance. Visit their latest shoes and styles at NewBalance.com and learn more about their program of giving back at #NBGivesBack.
You can also help support the podcast by visiting patreon.com/behindtheracketpod and receive rewards from our travels around the world. And now.
I think the one thing that people will always remember about Noah Rubin is, I think everybody the last week has just been so heartbroken with Roger Federer's retirement. I think you're so giving of yourself that you wanted to give the masses something to cheer them up. So you announced that you will no longer be playing tennis yourself so that people would no longer have to go through that pain anymore.
We've also,
and that's very kind of you.
Sold out of I Hate Noah Rubin shirts in the past 24 hours. So what a time.
What a time to be alive, really. Congratulations, I think. Are you at peace with things?
I'm at peace right now with the decision. I'm trying not to think of the overall of what it means. I think, you know, again, the first sentence of, we all know I've been kind of going back and forth with this for a couple of years now, probably, yeah, even more, about how I felt towards tennis and how I felt tennis was going and how it was for me. And I think the initial piece is that I don't think I have to make it bigger than it is. I'm just not enjoying myself doing it, so I just have to stop. And I think that's kind of the initial reaction was, I can't do it right this second, regardless of what I think I have left, regardless of where I think my talent could take me or the hard work, whatever. I just can't do it right now, and that's it.
Where are you going to start getting money? That's actually a legitimate question. That sounds snarky, but like, what's, you know, you hinted there will be much more in store, but like, yeah, realistically, over the next, let's say, a year, I think that's the real kind of what people want to know is how are you going to, yes, sustain things financially, but also you're a very competitive and driven individual. Where's that next step immediately as you start thinking about big picture?
Yeah, I mean, there's one stable thing, stable-ish, that I can't go into yet. That's kind of that next step that I'm going to leave for, probably it's going to be next week, coming out with that. But for the rest, I mean, you know, as you know, as much as you make fun, I do work hard in the networking and my other projects. Behind the Racket is a true passion. The last paragraph I was kind of alluding to it with documentaries, There's a hope for a club that I want to kind of produce and build in New York. I mean, there's a lot of those projects, some big as a club or a little bit smaller as a documentary that we've been working on as well. I mean, you have clothing line coming out and still a lot of passions within the world of tennis. I'm going to take your job. So that's a...
There's no chance you'll take my job. You would be so bored sitting in one spot for 10 hours at a time. You would hate it.
If anybody saw me in Charlottesville, it was a tough go at it, and that was two people.
15 minutes into commentary, and there's Noah like playing a game on his phone. You just couldn't do it.
Yeah, I do think you and I would have fun on the radio side. I think that could be something that if we did and kept, I needed like, for my own ADHD, I needed to keep going and on it just no stop. But it's funny because a lot of people have asked me about commentary broadcasting because they said, obviously, you know, the voice is fine, maybe not comparable to Mike, but you're much better looking.
That's true.
They said TV and no, and in all fairness, it's I don't know if it's something that I'm open to it, but it's not something that is necessarily a dream of mine. I think, you know, and I hate to say it, there's a certain personality that you have to uphold on TV. It's a little bit of that stage-like presence. And, you know, I want to shoot the shit. You know, I want to talk about what's actually happening. I don't know if there's too many places in tennis for that right now, but I can see working on a few things on the outside of that.
All kidding aside, I think it would be interesting to have you and Prakash do like a show very similar to who's it, Sterling Sharp, and what's that guy's name who I hate. every time I see him, I just want to punch whatever he's on. You know who I'm talking about, the guy who always says things that are wrong. My point being, if in terms of shooting the shit, I think that would be actually a really interesting way of going about it, because you and Prakash are both interesting and loud personalities in your own ways.
He's done well getting some good interviews out of players when I've seen it, and kind of, you know, getting down to the nitty-gritty a little bit more, not even, you know, serious, but just like, what are you actually thinking, you know, what's actually going on. I think there's a potential for that. It's not my first next step kind of thing. You know, I want to see where I could take Behind the Racket and some of those ventures. There's always fortunate enough to kind of be in New York, see what I can do in the meantime with just some quick lessons before, which is coming up in the next week or two, you know, this next little step that I'm trying out as well. So, yeah.
And I think it is important to say, first off, well, two things. Number one, I literally just told my daughter, Marnie, on the phone. We were just FaceTiming. She's over at her mom's, and I told her about your announcement. And she actually was sad. And she said, tell him to stop retiring.
actually, I do feel bad than she intends it to be.
I feel bad that she never got to watch you play once. In person. I mean, she watched you on TV several times. But that's one. And I guess the second part is, you're not... I got the sense from that notice and also just our talking off microphone that you're not saying no chance of ever coming back, but it's also not something that's even in your mind at this moment.
No, it's not. It's not something I'm thinking about it, because, you know, I think that was my issue during COVID. And when everybody said, oh, there was a break there, you know, you played a few tournaments, but it's still, you weren't playing much. That's not a break. That's not a real break for me as a tennis player. So no, I'm not, again, I'm not shutting the door completely, but at the same point, I'm not shutting the door completely because, you know, we've seen other players come back from 2 years and feel okay. And, you know, we're saying a year or two, I could be, you know, 28. It's not past my prime by any means. But again, right now where I'm at, it's just not something I can dedicate my time to. You know, do I think I can kind of lead this and grind it out and be okay and be 120 in the world again? Yeah, but that's not worth it for me right now. You know, I think if I want to do it and be top 50 in the world of where I think my game could be, I have to kind of put myself in that dungeon. I have to really grind it out. I have to, you know, have the resources to have that team behind me. There's a lot of moving parts, a lot that have made me exhausted right now. And I think even with all the chips falling in the right place with that team. I just mentally I'm not there right now, and I can't waste that time.
Well, I do get the sense that I think there are a lot of people, Noah, all kidding aside, who are retirement, if you will, at mm-hmm. such a young age. I think there are always people who will question it and just wonder, you know, if it's right or not. And it's such an unfair thing for us to do on the outside, because ultimately all that matters is you. But what I took out of just seeing, you know, the initial response on social media is there are just so many people who are, you know, in our collective worlds, mm-hmm. if you will, if I include myself in that, yeah. who certainly understand it, and everybody seems to get it. This is a hard life if you're not in the top 50. It's a hard life being away from friends and family and loved ones all the time. And if it's not fulfilling enough, I don't think there's anybody who's been grinding on the challenger level for 4 or 5 years that doesn't understand what you right. have gone through over the last couple of years. So I think there are, you know, I'll say for me, I will miss getting to see you play. And that enjoyment when you were playing at that level that you're capable of. I miss seeing that joy on your face when you have that moment, those moments. But at the same time, I too completely understand, and I am happy for you to be at peace with this moment. And that's ultimately the important thing. So
no, I appreciate it. I was
Mazel tov.
That was funny. I got a lot more positive messages than I was even hoping for. But you know, I was even getting messages from players saying, "I can't make that move right now. It's something yep. that I've been pondering for some time." You know, kind of thing, yeah. and almost like a jealousy, which is ironic because I'm I wouldn't say jealous yet because I am at peace with it, but. You know, there's always going to be like, oh, you guys are getting ready for Australian Open, or you guys are yeah. in San Diego right now. And there's always going to be part of that. And I'm just going to have to deal with that as it comes. But, you know, to see the jealousy from the other side of like, I don't know. You know, I'm trying and I can't give it up yet, or I can't take time off because this is what I have to do right now. But there's definitely a part of me that's tired and that yeah. needs to, you know, take a nap for a second.
It's an interesting juxtaposition, obviously, when you do compare about the fact that you're retiring about a week from Roger Federer's retirement yes. announcement, although he's got Laver Cup coming up this week, still apparently a game time decision whether he'll be able to give it a go at all
right.
In London, which is, I don't know, it's I want you obviously have had some interactions on and off court with Roger. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that I will take, there are two things. One personal being that of the big four, if you will, he's the only one who I haven't yet gotten to interview. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of,
yeah,
you know, like on that. The personal yeah, yeah. like level, it's just like, damn it. That's, I would love, I never got that moment.
Yeah.
Two. There's three, actually, not just two. Mm-hmm. Two, I'm so saddened that someone of that magnitude did not get to go out on his terms. You know, doing it on court, competing like Serena did, obviously yeah. at the Open. I'm truly saddened that he didn't get to finish competing
Farewell
the way he
tour.
Wanted to. He'll obviously have a farewell tour at some yeah. point in exhibitions, and it'll be fun and enjoyable and everything. And then lastly, I'll just close with this quick story. I mentioned it briefly on Twitter the other day, but in 2006, I was, yeah, I know you were just being born. I know.
Yeah.
But 2006, right. I was running websites for Rajiv Ram and Amir Delic. Mm-hmm. Who played at Illinois, and obviously Rajiv is still playing now. But me and a couple of friends, we went to Wimbledon to watch qualifying. Amir was in qualifying, and so we wanted to kind of go and be there and support, take some pictures, do some stuff for the website, etc. Websites were actually a big deal at the time. And we had this guy who, his name was Doug Dixon, who ran the locker rooms at Wimbledon. Every year at the Champagne Challenger, Craig Tiley had invited Doug over to run the locker rooms at the Atkins Tennis Center for the Champaign Challengers. This like huge touch of class to have this guy coming from Wimbledon and like handling everything at the Atkins Tennis Center. It was amazing, but I made friends with him. And so I was going to be coming over and I said, Doug, is there any chance, I know it's the week before the tournament, is there any chance that we could get like just a quick tour and just to see around? And he was just, sure, no problem. It's great. So me and a couple of friends who are not like huge tennis nerds, but like I was, right? And he gave us this incredible tour for about 45 minutes to an hour. Again, the week before Wimbledon starts, like busy, busy times. And as you know, Wimbledon qualifying offsite, Roehampton. Right. So it's very quiet. There's nobody on the grounds. As a result, like he let us just go next to center court and like touch the grass. Like it was like, for me, I was just like,
yeah.
Oh my God. We were walking around. He was walking us to the locker rooms and like we turned the corner and there's Rafa with his girlfriend in 2006 and comes over and, you know, Doug, it's great to see you. Hugs, shakes everybody's hands, you know, very polite, whatever. And then we're kind of finishing the tour. And one of those walkways, those upper walkways between buildings at Wimbledon, he just said, hey, guys, I got to go get to this. Just wait here for a second. I'll be back and we'll get you out of here. And we could see off in the distance on one of the courts, there was just the only sound at Wimbledon. It was one ball being struck. And we could look out on one of the outer courts and it's fucking Fed, man.
Yeah.
And we're just sitting there just like, I don't know who was on the other side of the court. I have no idea. But it was just so unmistakable, that form, that grace with which he was hitting mixed with the power. And just seeing there, it just being so close to that at these hallowed grounds of Wimbledon. And it was, I said on Twitter, it was like as close to heaven as I'm ever going to get. Like it was like a transcendent experience to be able to be that intimate with him for the one moment. And I'll just never forget that for the rest of my life. Just that, I don't know, that feeling of getting to be that close to it. On the other hand, got to be up close to it on Rod Laver Arena in the second round of the Australian Open. Yeah. And I, what are your thoughts as you look back on that and his career and what it's meant to tennis?
Well, first of all, just work on your tribute speech for me next time. The Fed one was you teared up. Yeah, during mine was a quick couple minutes. But no, okay. Yeah, we'll work on that next time.
I've got more. Don't worry. I could go in.
For Fed or on me? Okay.
Yeah, if need be.
No, it's okay. Let's not bring up our, you know, weathered friendship and start in Charlottesville. It's okay. Don't worry about it. Yes, Fed. He's cool. Yeah, I mean, it's just there's not many times that tennis is brought up without Federer's name being brought up. You know, the only other person that's going to compete in this capacity, which I just, you know, sad for whatever it is, just won't have the Federer charisma is Serena. You know, the Serena's name is brought up, you know, at that kind of transcending tennis into so many other facets.
Yes.
Federer does it, but at this more of this godlike, like if you are in this vicinity, it's yeah, I mean you're in hallowed grounds right now. Like you have to respect that. And you know, whether, you know, you saw like Tommy Paul, they were talking about in Davis Cup a little bit. Like when you're hearing players speak about it, yeah. I mean, even if you ask me, if there's I would love nothing more than to be playing a match against Rafael Nadal. It's always been a dream of mine. Just to feel that, to feel what it's like against him. But if a player hasn't played either Federer or Nadal, they want to play Federer. You know, it's just, you know, it's always, you can't measure what it is that Federer has. You can't measure how it equates in real life influence, but it's Federer. You know, it's like one of those things where I, you know, I got up, I was about to be the coin toss. Besides my now fiance, I have not looked into somebody's eyes so deeply and with so much passion.
Yeah.
Than I did with Federer that day. I was like, oh, yeah, that it looked like I was looking at a TV. in real life. And there, and it's tough to describe it. So, you know, when the guy was staring at me while I was taking a sip after I broke him the third, as much as I eat that up and that's like my fucking – that's fuel to the fire for me, I was just like, I just pissed off Federer. But yeah. Who's Federer and why am I here? Like, it could have been anybody else, and I truly believe I could be on the court with anybody. But this had nothing to do with tennis. This was just what he has become as a person. And there are very, very few athletes in the past millennium that have done what he has. And and it shows. I mean, it shows just how people respect him, how they talk about him. And his fucking sponsors. You know, you could put it in, if you want to put it in true terms, just look at the people he's brought around and the people that have stuck by him. It is pretty amazing.
You know, and I Abigail Johnson, who's a friend of mine, commentator in Great Britain, made the point last week, and it's a fantastic one. I don't think Novak and Rafa would get to the same heights had Roger not been there as the bar. He pushed them to nth degree, and they then pushed him. And the three of them just took tennis to this other level because, you know, Roger was there, and then it was just right. Like, okay, now we've got a rivalry, and we're going to push and push and push. And it's just we benefited so much from
we
him.
Have Alcaraz now, you know, that's how right. It works, you know. Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think, you know, everybody says, you know, Rafa, they want to win slams, Novak, I think they just want to beat the shit out of Fed, you know. I think that's what it really came down to. They were watching this guy who doesn't sweat,
yeah,
who looks like a fucking ballerina out there, and they're like, I'm not gonna be that, so I have to beat it, and I have to find a way how to do that. Yeah. And, you know, Rafa found his, I'm going to be, you think it's a brick wall? No, this is an unmovable force. And then Novak's, you know, I'm going to be rubber band man that's not going to get tired. And, you know, these people found their niche because they were forced into something to say, hey, it's not good enough just to be the greatest of this, you know, couple of years that I'm playing. No, I have to beat Roger Federer, and that's going to force me to take the chance, because I think they were risking the player they were, you know, that whole saying, the player they are today for something they could become.
Yeah.
And Rafa and Novak did that and became, you know, the next bar of what tennis needed to be. And, you know, there are a lot of players that are thankful for that, but obviously we only see at the top of the sport, but they changed tennis.
And so many people in their memories of Roger, when he made the announcement, so many people just said he's the one that made them love the sport. I mean, I count myself among them. I have the utmost respect and love for all three of those champions, the big three. But Roger was the one watching him. It took my passion for the sport to a different level because it was something that I'd never seen before. Yeah. And that's I'm not alone in that. That was just something I saw so much on social media. And that is, I think that's ultimately going to be the legacy, right? Like, he's going to be surpassed in so many of the records that he has, with Novak playing for another 5, 6, 7 years. More than likely, all of those records are going to be surpassed. But I think that's the thing that's going to be left, is his, the way he played, the way he, just who he was, made people love tennis more than anything. And that's something that it will never be surpassed in my mind.
Yeah, for me, it was how he affected non-tennis fans.
Yeah.
You know, we could always, you know, you go to the true tennis fanatics and they're going to tell you, you know, how much they love Golbis. Yeah, I don't know. You know, I'm just making up a name. how the fuck Golbis was the first one that comes to my head.
Alberto Berrettini was mine. That was the first guy. I was like, that's my dude. But it's like...
God, we need a break. But no, it was how they saw him, and, you know, we use the word transcend, but it was more just, God, I watched Federer and I knew nothing, but the guy's just like majestic, you know, and it was just like him. And that's, you know, I think we're seeing a little bit in Alcaraz of just that athleticism and what that's bringing from other sports. And for this, it was like, he's taking a sport that we know is pretty damn tough and making it pretty damn easy.
Yeah.
with so much confidence, but also like he's kind of humble. Like what are we doing? And then it's, oh, wait, he has everything, but he's nice and he seems graceful. And now Anna Wintour, you know, it's just like you're going for all these things. And when I was listening from, you know, from the outside perspective, I was like, he is influential, you know, beyond anything. And he is, in the eyes of other people, have taken tennis to another step. And that's
and,
it.
And pretty, my memories of Roger will also include some. I mean, he is a bit of a locker room jokester as well, from what you've told me. And I those are obviously things that are kept, you know, between players and inside that locker room. But it, just hearing some of the stories from other players, it just, He is very much just a guy.
Yeah.
And there's something to be said for that.
Yeah. No, 100%. I, you know, there's a lot of, you know, when you spoke about going out on his own terms, you know, people a lot, you know, relate to like a Brady, you know, of sorts. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I think he's okay. You know, I think he really is. I think he's come, you know, I think it took a while for him to get there and say, ah, my body's really not getting back into it at the level I needed to be. I think he needed that. I think Brady needs that, you know, in a sense of saying you have one too many concussions or you just took one too many hits, like take a step back. So I think for Fed, because on the Brady side, it's this lingering, I don't think is great for the end of his career, where Fed is like, oh my God, we feel so bad. He's going on this. This is, here's the Laver Cup. Here's a possible farewell tour. He did all he could, you know?
And
it's over. I think there is a tight knit, you know, end page, end chapter to this. I mean, it was funny because when I played him in 2017, that was when people thought he was retiring. You know, he came back from
people
an
thought
injury.
He was retiring in 2012. Well, I mean, what I mean, true, like, you know what I mean?
It's sure. But you know, he had that long out in 2016. There was no way he was coming back, and then he had. Yeah. I mean, Aussie, that Miami, year, right. Indian, you know, Wimby, and we're like, okay. And also, here he is. He did what he could, and you know, as much as we talk about change in tennis and everything, I put him to the side. You know, how much more can I ask of the guy, you know, to do for the sport of tennis? You know, he, as much as if it may not be a conscious effort, he's elevated the sport to heights that, you know, we really don't have, you know, we can't have the entitlement to ask for more. We really can't.
We were going to talk about the changes for the Challenger Tour, but we're not going to do that. We'll move that to another podcast maybe next week. It'll give us a reason to talk next week. So, you know, because we don't normally do that too well. I guess I want to leave with this. What will you miss most about tennis or the tour, you know, in terms of your retirement? What are you going to miss? What do you think is going to be the hardest thing for you to kind of separate yourself from?
Yeah, I mean, because tennis encompasses, you know, the physical, mental, and emotional sides all into one, you know, I always spoke about, everybody's like, why, you know, why the tears, you know, after a match or after winning a slam? I was like, A, it's a fucking tough tournament. But B, it's the accumulation of everything that's taken place in our lives. It's the fight. It's the effort. So, you know, the little wins that I've had throughout my career, I think that's the miss is, do I know or do I think I could find that in something else? I'm not sure, you know? So, you know, it's the lowest lows that then, because you overcome those and you surpass the boundaries, you get through that and you were putting yourself in places that were so fucking uncomfortable for so long and you did overcome that in a small time, that elation and that relief and that excitement is overwhelming. And there is a feeling that comes with that. You know, on the other side, those are tough to come by, you know, and you're sacrificing a lot for those to come. You know, I was fairly successful as a professional tennis player and very rarely had success. You know, as if you want to talk about it like that, I mean, you know, as much as the junior career was great, and I would say that was more successful than not, the pros, you know, I'm losing most of my matches, you know, and that's just how the cookie crumbles. So for me, at the end, it was a simple math equation where it just wasn't tilting in the right direction. The weights weren't going in the form of the, you know, euphoric winning feeling wasn't enough for the hardship journey and the travel and the losses and the sacrifices. I'm tired of sacrificing at the level that I was. You know, I'm missing out on important events and leaving my family behind. And it was enough for me right now. But that doesn't mean that if I have a little bit more stability in the next year or two that I wouldn't have another go.
Well, to quote the great Andy Murray, I'm not fucking done. I'm sticking around. I'm not gonna let the sadness of losing you, you know, bring me down. Obviously, you're leaving the podcast with you not being a player anymore, so that will be hard for all of us. I know.
You'll enjoy your time with Chris, I'm sure. You know what? The meme that came to mind was the Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
I'm not fucking leaving. That's.
I will miss having you out on tour.
Yeah,
I really will. That will be difficult. So start coaching or something, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't mean I don't know. I always, because people ask, okay, you get a coach on tour? I was like, yeah, let's travel for less money. Yeah,
right.
You know, I think there are,
at least,
you
know, it's stable money.
Yeah, you know, you do know what you're going to get. There's something to be said. Hey, but there's a 180% increase in Challenger Tour, so we'll talk about that next week. But with that being said, a lot of my love for tennis was affecting people, seeing the look on their faces when I ran out on ball that they didn't think a taxi cab can get to, and cheering and, you know, shooting my shit with the people and the fans in the stands. But that wasn't happening enough for me. And I see that when I'm helping out a 12-year-old kid with a question, or somebody that's just coming on tour, or even, you know, a 50-year-old fanatic that's getting on the court for the second time. I found that love there even more at times than, you know, these Challenger or even ATP matches that I've had 30 or 40 people watching, and, you know, I'm playing for not much on the line. So I think I'm excited for what's going to come next. There's a lot there, and going to have to channel that a little bit, but we'll still be friends.
I don't know if we ever were.
Okay. Okay.
More on the podcast next week about the Challenger changes.
Yep.
And then I'm actually headed to Tiburon the week after. Yeah.
I honestly, if there was any fucking tournament for me to pop by with my housing there, incredible people, beautiful place. Fuck it, I might come. It is freezing though.
It's freezing in the morning.
In the morning, it is chilly.
You really should. Yeah, that would be one to just come hang out. Yeah. And plus, if you show up on Sunday, you get to see Marnie.
I'm in.
Okay. I'll see you there. But yeah, we'll have a podcast next week, and then I'm nailing down Jason Kubler for the week after. Guy's been ducking me.
Yeah, he has been.
He acknowledges.
Guy wins a few matches on grass. And
he acknowledges
boom.
That he owes me a podcast.
You see, first step is acceptance, but now we're past that now. Now he's using that as a scapegoat, and that's not okay. And you need to grow a mohawk because I am dying.
It's coming back. I'm doing it.
Oh, wow.
I'm doing it.
Okay.
I'm doing it starting in November.
Okay. Do you think that's going to be ready for Aussie, or how is that going to look?
I think by the next November, there might be an inch of growth.
On all sides. Okay.
Yes. No, the side. Nobody wants. Nobody cares.
Nope.
Have a great week, everybody.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The show might be over, but the conversation isn't. Join us on social media at NoahRubin33, at MikeCTennis, and at Behind the Racket.
Expect new episodes every Monday or Tuesday. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. It really helps us expand and reach more listeners as we take you behind the racket.